One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
Hello and welcome to episode 162 of What Most People Think. And finally, the suspense is broken, people. It's going to be Liz Truss. I know. We've been in limbo, not knowing who our next Prime Minister is going to be. But it's going to be Liz Pork Markets Truss. I would say to any of my lefty friends out there, or even my loony FBPE types, the pork markets gag is good. You know, anything that drives people from your point of view to look at that speech, I guess works. But just be aware that all jokes have a shelf life and you don't want that to become the new Orange Man bad. And I'm sorry if that's a bit Twitter speak. But, well, you know, hopefully that as Liz Truss gets into power, people find some more original things to say about her. And of course, we'll be having a big deep dive on both the announcement and what it all means and a bit of speculation as to how Truss is going to do. So this is What Most People Think. If you haven't listened to it before, I'm trying to get to the heart of what sort of common public opinion is. And of course, you know, for quite a while on this podcast, it veered towards, you know, the Conservatives. I mean, not like the majority of the country, but certainly an electoral majority. I just wonder whether or not you're with me here in that you increasingly find yourself a little bit dismayed at the state of both parties. And I don't want to get into that realm of kind of going, well, they're all as bad as each other, but You get the Tories who have clearly found themselves in a little bit of a hole, but luckily they've taken enough shovels down there to keep digging. And then you just look at Labour and you go, it's just an empty space. I don't get it. What is Labour? Do you know what I mean? Labour's sort of like, do you remember Tab Clear? Do you remember that Coke from the 90s where you just go, it's clear. I don't understand. It's supposed to be Labour. It's supposed to be red, but it's clear. That's what Labour are. Labour are the Tab Clear of politics. We'll be discussing all of that. And of course, Joe Lycett's prank on the Laura Koonsberg show on Sunday morning. A bit of a spoiler. I laughed at it. But we were discussing some of the reaction to that and then some of the reaction when I made a very lighthearted joke. But just a quick update with me is I went to Chessington. I went to Chessington World of Adventures last Thursday. And there was a guy, I don't know if he listens to the podcast, who just said to me, you Jeff Norcott. There was something about the way he said it. And do you know when you go like, that happens to me sometimes, but I just thought like I owed him money. We had a nice photo and then just a shout out to, I think the guy's name was Tom. And then there was a guy who lives near me that I was out for a run. And I think he was listening to my podcast at that point. So in fairness to him, that was a weird event to be listening to my podcast and then for me to come running past. He might have thought that he could just kind of summon the spirits of comedians by listening to their podcast. So I said a quick hello to him and he said to me that he was surprised that he lived where I lived. And I said, you're fucking surprised, mate. I'm on telly. I thought I'd be doing better. I'm only joking. I live in a very nice place and this kid may well live in a mansion. But listen, like a lot of people who grew up in London, I absolutely cannot afford to live there or certainly live in a decent gaff. Domain Talking Point, where our super patron, David Domain. David sends me a lot of very interesting stuff and I'll pick out one bit. And from the last episode with Mark Steele, which, by the way, check it out. You know, if you're in that mood now where you just want to hear people of different opinions talk with a little bit of nuance and respect and understanding, then do give that one a check. And if you don't, just stick with the anger, man. Get yourself on Twitter. That is the place to be. But we were talking about the Poet Laureate. I was talking about the Poet Laureate, and David has done some research on the post of Poet Laureate. In England, the post was created in the 17th century, inspired by the Roman and Greek tradition. According to the Poetry Society, the job has no formal description. That's a fucking good job, isn't it? In the past, the laureate was expected to write poetry for royal events and national occasions. What if they're not fucking doing that now? This is the problem with modern Britain. I bet this is since COVID, isn't it? You know, the poet laureate probably got fucking furloughed. Yeah. Had a taste of the good life, didn't he? Sitting at home, not writing any poetry. which is not, let's be honest, the most taxing job in the world. By the way, if you are a poet and earning money from it, email in, but keep it short. You know, it's like with poetry, you know, it can outstay its welcome. What most people think, uk@gmail.com. But as David says, this is no longer an official requirement to write poetry for royal events and national occasions. That's astonishing. This is why this country's going down the fucking pan. Let me tell you. If the poet laureate isn't required to write... What happened? Did the poet laureate, did they make some sort of representation to Human Resources going, I just find the stress levels when I know there's a royal wedding, the expectations. They're like, no, it's fine. You know, under employment law, we will now excuse you from that. And yes, you can bring your comfort animal into work. And by work, I mean you just sitting in the fucking snug of your mansion, not writing poetry. Carol Ann Duffy wrote poems to mark a wide variety of situations. Politics about the poems about the MP's expenses scandal. Sounds like a great subject for poetry. About the eruption of the Icelandic volcano in 2010. She taking a piss. You're the poet laureate. Write stuff that the Queen will like and that they can read out on the fucking one show, okay? Or let someone else have a go, okay? The Icelandic volcano. Ash, smash, I'll travel in trash. I'm stuck in Cyprus. And this is, I wish this was behind us. New patrons. We're talking here at the top of the show about new board members. Andrew Welch. Andrew, I mean, there's the obvious gag on Andrew's. I'm going to think people call you Andy Welch. Andy Welch, roving sales rep. I'm not saying you're like Finchy from The Office. Yeah, I was up to my nuts and guts. Oh, I just remember what a gross line that was. But Andy Welch, yeah, and you need to speak to Andy Welch about that. Andy Welch will be in on Tuesday. Andy Welch is the kind of guy that knows his way around checking in places. He's on the road enough, do you know what I mean? He does his online check-ins. He knows how to do the key drop. He checks, do you know, he knows where the vending machines are in the Travelodge on the M4 Swindon West. He's a fucking legend. And Roy Burdett, Roy, who actually became a board member a while ago and didn't get a shout out. So apologies to that. If you do genuinely at any tier of the patrons think that you have never had your shout out, and I can check. I can't actually. But I can check is message me through the Patreon website. That's one of the benefits of being a patron, is that you can message me. Is it a benefit? I don't know. But I will reply in time unless you get weird about it. That's the rule. It's not a formal rule. But you know what I mean? If you're composing a message to me at 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning, there's a chance that you're abusing. You're abusing the Patreon privileges. And just to remind you, the purpose of the Patreon, you'll have already realised, where are the adverts for weird new products that I don't want? Why has this podcast not tried to get me to do online cancelling yet? Why is this podcast not trying to get me to buy crypto? Well, it's because it's funded by our glorious patrons. Okay, let's do a quick thank you and a fuck you. The thank you goes to, and this will sort of dovetail with stuff later in the show, but just to like the loons on Twitter for reminding me that they were still out there, that you, how many nutters you still get. So I did a tweet, I did a post on Friday of last week, and it was just, I found out that Keir Starmer was 60, and I found out, right, I'm letting you process this in real time as well, and I found out that Liz Truss was 47, and both of those things seem surprising to me, because Keir Starmer looks younger than 60, and Liz Truss, let's be, you know, with respect, looks more experienced than 47, so I thought that was odd. And then I thought, you know, wouldn't it be funny if she answered every PMQ with OK Boomer, which is this thing that kids were saying online for a while. You know, any baby boomers, they could dismiss their opinions by going OK Boomer. It was a very silly joke. It did OK. There were a few comments and then a day went past. And I just happened to check Twitter and there's all these fucking people just going mental, right? Do fucking right wing hate humour. So look, if you, because what happens is these kind of like the serious end of like the really FBP, follow back pro Europe, enjoying, look, I'm not saying this is all of them, but there are ones that they all communicate with each other all the time. So they try and set it up so people pile in on it. And look, if they're saying that they thought the joke was shit, I'm like, yeah, it's Twitter. If I thought it's really good, I'd put it on a podcast or in my live act. With respect, tweets are normally things that I do whilst waiting for the toast to pop up. Do you know what I mean? And occasionally whilst having a shit. So they all, a lot of them took it very seriously. But if they thought it was a crap joke, fine. They don't seem to realise that as comics, our jokes not being funny is like a day in, day out risk. It's like stuntmen getting fucking bruises off the sugar glass. We know it's a possibility, right? Bruises off the sugar glass? Is sugar glass even a thing? David Demain, please do your thing. But then there was this other group of people that were like, that took it seriously as a suggestion. Like I thought, like I was trying to suggest that Liz Truss should actually get up and say this. And then there was this spin-off conversation, which was this is why right-wing humour doesn't work. Okay, this is why it doesn't work, because it's just fueled by hate. And then there was these people that were saying, I can't believe he's punching down. I was, punching down on Sir Keir Starmer, former head of the Crown Prosecution Service and probable Prime Minister in waiting. That poor man. When will that poor man get a platform, eh? Poor Sir Keir Starmer being punched down on. It's just odd to me at a time when I'm getting loads of criticism from right-wingers saying that I've gone left-wing, that these fucking weirdos. There's this one journalist that came out of the blue and said, dude, seriously, I thought you were better than that. And this, for anybody that's listened to last week's podcast, was particularly pointed. I was like, I haven't said a racist joke, do you know what I mean? I haven't said something homophobic. I've basically pointed out that two people have surprising ages. And I bet you right now, some of you have even stopped the podcast right now. If you're with somebody, go, babe, do you know Liz Truss is 47? And she put down her book for that one. What? She's 47. Oh my God. 47? She must have had a hard life. Of course she did. She was in the Lib Dems. There you go. I got out of it with a little Lib Dem slam. Always. If you're in trouble, just criticise the Lib Dems. They're happy to be mentioned. And then the fuck you goes to poor old Jameela Jamil, right? Who came back to Twitter after saying that she was never coming back. Because I think it was because fucking someone was... Who was that guy? Elon Musk was buying Twitter. And then she got in trouble. I'm just pulling up the tweet here. Sorry, this whole show is not going to be about social media, but it will have an element because that actually has been, you know, I mean, what Joe Lycett did was front page on the Daily Mail, you know, and part of that was because of the social media response. So Twitter isn't Britain, but sometimes it genuinely is the news, if you get my drift. So Jameela Jamil said, I accidentally misgendered somebody who was rude to me on here yesterday because I did not know they were non-binary. I instantly corrected myself, so she did it instantly, but nobody reads your bios, people. Please include your pronouns in your name on here to prevent misunderstandings or offence if it's important to you, right? So I'm going to say the first mistake that she's made there against her own side is saying that nobody reads your bios, because that's what they need to believe. They need to believe that all their stuff, all the he, him, they, ze, that everyone's reading that and seeing all the flags. But then she gets corrected by somebody who says, for what it's worth, the black community has asked that we use NB for non-binary people, as NB typically means non-black. I only know this because someone corrected me a while ago. So try and share the info. I mean, of course, the person that said this isn't a black person. Of course it isn't. They've got a lot. it's always going to be a white middle-class woman, probably, isn't it? Or some guy with a fucking sailor's beard. So this person then corrects that person. It's all a bit he said, she said, isn't it? Folks need to just be careful, because some non-binary people find NB to be infantilizing and really dislike it. Been told off a few times for using it. When in doubt, use the full non-binary. So you've got one of the wokest people on Twitter, then getting outwoked and then woked again. And I know that woke is overused, but you tell me how the hell else I describe that exchange. What is the word to describe what's happened there? Somebody, I mean, like being misgendered on Twitter. It's not like, do you know what I mean? It's not like you turned up to a wedding in a dress and someone said, hello, sir. It's fucking Twitter. You got tiny little photos. Someone like Jameela. I never expected to find myself defending poor old Jameela Jamil. She's like, how much has she done for woke and social justice causes? I mean, that's the point, isn't it? This is why people sometimes back away from being right on, politically correct, woke, or whatever you want to call it. Because what they see is examples, is that you'll probably never be able to do it well enough for some people. So I stand in solidarity with one of those little fists. I'll make sure it's the right colour one. But I stand with Jameela Jamil. Let's have a quick chat about our glorious new leader, Liz Truss. People. Okay, so on Monday at 12:30, Graham Brady, the chairman of the 1922 committee, I mean, he's one of the busiest chairmen of committees in world politics, isn't he? He's out there. He's out there coordinating leadership campaigns every other day, the poor fella. But he came forward with his very nice voice, very reassuring, Graham Brady. So the process was undertaken over a... Look, Graham, the one thing nobody needs at this point is a fucking recap. This has gone on. This has gone on so long, mate. And you slightly fucked up. I mean, I've normally been a Graham Brady fan, but the length of this process, I don't know what... Who was this for? It was like a sort of book tour for a book you didn't want to sell. It was like you've got, right, there's really bad stuff in this book. Let's go and let's just trash our own brand to the point where no one buys this book. It was like a Gerald Ratner's moment, but across a whole summer. A whole summer. And so he gives the stats, you know, there was a 82% turnout, the 176,000 members, you know, and it reminded me of when, you know, you used to have those big rock and roll tours where they go, you know, you two have 17 planes and fucking 22,000 metres of cabling. You're not going to hear that post-Greta, are you? No rock and roll bands are stressing just how much fucking metal and energy they use. They just go, this tour has 13 healing booths and 12,000 comfort animals. Emotional support animals. If I just misgendered, if I misspecies comfort support animals, do feel free to fucking not tell me. And so eventually we get the result. And what was the result? It was like 57% to 42%. It was closer than people thought. Closer than people thought. And I'm glad for Rishi. I am glad because he did better than a lot of people expected. And, you know, he did come undone a bit. I think he did himself a lot of harm in the early stages of it when he, you know, just seemed like the guy, I've done the revision, you know, I deserve an A star. I deserve an A star. Mother. I mean, if you'd have done a drinking game, taking a drink every time he mentioned the fact his mum was a chemist, I mean, you'd be having your stomach pumped, you know. If you'd done a shot of his mum's medicine every time he mentioned his mum's medicine, you'd have been in trouble. But I was glad for him, you know, because I think it did sort of suggest to Liz Truss, because, look, I like to think of myself as Ian Dale once had put it, like a non-headbanging Tory, you know, quite a moderate guy in a lot of respects. So I quite like the fact that sensible Rishi was given a good, you know, he posted some decent numbers, right? He posted some decent numbers. So hopefully Liz Truss will not just pack out. I mean, she did say that thing in her speech about... I'm gonna have a cabinet of all the talents. They all fucking say that, don't they? Has there ever been a world leader that hasn't, in their acceptance speech, said, I'm going to bring in people from across the board? And then the moment they go, right, gone to their mates, what's that group? Who wants a job? Who wants a job? Because I'm the fucking boss now. Yeah, that's right. I'm that bitch now. And then she, I got to say, a lot of people ask me, what do you think about Liz Truss? I think that there are some lefties out there that maybe have drifted towards me, surprisingly, since I've agreed with them on some things. But they're worried I'm going to come out in favour of Liz Truss and then they'll have to hate me again. I do not think she is a great speaker. Controversial. Are you fucking kidding me? Who's making the noise? Sorry about that. I had to move upstairs there because my neighbour... dared to mow a lawn. Can't everybody have plastic fucking grass like me? I know some of you would be disgusted. Yeah, I've had plastic grass since 2012. I don't regret it a single bit, okay? And anything I've said about politics so far has probably gone out of the window. Some of you are just going, fucking Norcott. Not only has he got a cockapoo, he's got plastic grass. Is he even a real man at this point? But yeah, so this is the kind of... How kind of wrapped up in yourself you can get is I was outraged. How dare she do something in her garden which inconveniences my podcast? So I came to the back of the house. I've come to the back of the house and someone started a motorbike outside. And I was like, what the fuck? But going back to where I'm at on Liz Truss, I hope she's better than I fear. And that's not just because of my... Can you hear that? The phone's going. That's the second... By the way, that was the second person that had tried to phone me while I was doing this. Some would say, put your phone on silent, Jeff. So Liz Truss, maybe this will be like Liz Truss's premiership. It never really gets going. But yeah, based on what she said, so she gets up and does this speech. And one of the things that people have held against her is she's not a good communicator. So you think, okay, Liz, you won the race. get up, reassure everybody that you can talk in public, but generally. So she gets up and she does this slightly weird speech, which I'll be honest, I don't know if she was doing a little callback to the old pork markets thing, but it was a bit porky. Do you know what I mean? They had the scent of a pork market wafting across the stage as she was hesitating and pausing to wait too long for rounds of applause. Now, obviously you can read too much into this stuff, but you go, are you able to grow as a politician and as a performer? Because very soon you're going to be, you know, doing PMQs. And the evidence of this is kind of concerning. She left a couple of pauses for jokes. There was one that she said, well, not jokes, sorry, for applause breaks. And she gave fulsome praise to Boris Johnson. And she said that he's loved from Kiev to Carlisle. Now, there was a pause there. And a lot of people online have commented that fell flat. And you know, people didn't agree with her. Perhaps there wasn't as much love for Boris in the room. I think they were just really fucking shocked at the two choices of places. You know, you can make a separate point that Boris Johnson does have a legacy in Ukraine of being a strong ally to the country. But from Kiev to Carlisle, I just think if you'd have had a sweepstake, you're going to go, all right, Liz Truss is going to do an analogy containing two cities. I think Kiev, Carlisle, if you've got that, you're going, fuck them, do you know what I mean? I don't know why I still do these sweepstakes. I want my £2 back. You know, the expectation is so low now. I mean, it's... in terms of how she performs and you know, what she does in government. And in terms of PMQs, I mean, the difficult thing for her is going to be that Starmer, who often, you know, he was good on Partygate, but who could often look quite wooden next to Boris sometimes. But also, I don't think Boris ever fully delivered on his raconteur kind of improv fucking reputation. You know what I mean? I don't remember. I mean, the funniest one he did about... Starmer, I think, was he's a human bollard. It was just funny because it was a weird thing to say. But, you know, next to Liz Truss, Starmer could seem quite charismatic, you know. He could seem like Stephen Mulhern. Sorry, the woman opposite. I don't know what she's talking about. Maybe she wants to go take a visit to a pork market. Wagga, wagga, wagga. What's going to happen in that first PMQs, right, is that somebody, one of the SPADs, the special advisors, these youngsters that tend to, it's always weirdly young people that tend to surround, you know, the PM and leading politicians, they'll pitch a few joke lines and they'll go, you've got to do one joke, Liz. And I remember, do you remember the first one that Theresa May did to Corbyn, where she made this analogy, and it was quite a tortured analogy about, it was clearly about Corbyn. And then when she finished it, she went, remind you of anybody? And she was obviously got so nervous in the lead up to the delivery. Her face was contorted. It was like a weird spectacle. Remind you of anybody? You're like, that is the opposite of a joke. That's fucking harrowing. It's like Amanda Holden's video on TikTok. By the way, if I'm not saying you should definitely go on TikTok, but just check out this weird video that Amanda Holden did. I'll leave it at that. Get back to me. Let me know what you think. So the question is going to be with Liz Truss is, what is the plan on energy? And, you know, I think we're all kind of expecting, probably, I'd say the most probable outcome is an energy freeze, maybe not as long as Labour said, maybe more targeted. Because that is a problem with the Labour plan, is it sort of benefits everybody and excessively benefits the well-off. You know, Labour have an argument, and that's because means testing is time-consuming and expensive, right? Fair enough, but you've at least got to make that argument. But the real issue is that neither of the main parties have said anything about business. That's what I find so odd, is that we've got this far in it, and all the focus has been on the individual, but the businesses have been absorbing these costs for fucking ages. You know what I mean? You've got businesses going, you know, you just hear them on the radio phone-in to go, I run a chip shop in East Wittering, and... our turnover is 120 grand a year and our electricity bill's gone up from 7 grand to 120 grand a year. So, and these people, these poor bastards, you know what I mean? They're clearly in shock and the numbers are horrific. And they're going, so we don't really know what we're going to do when our electricity bill is the same as all of the fucking money that we ever make, ever. And so she's got to address that. If she's a real conservative, she needs to put business importantly, because that's one of the strengths of the Conservatives brand. It's like, there is no... there's nothing without, you know, good business, sound money, tax revenue coming in, corporation tax, right? All this stuff is what funds all the things that we all value. Why am I getting so passionate? But, you know, I'm not like opposed to a health service that's free at a point of service, but it needs to be fucking funded. It's all got to be funded. So please, I hope if there's any chance there's anybody from the Conservative Party listening, is if you want to win back the respect of some of the people you might have lost under Boris, just mention business, a plan for business. And also, you know, let's just have some, let's have some sensible people around her, okay? Let's not do the kind of the cabinet that's to kind to sort of show Boris fans that you're still on side, like you're still part of his crew. Yeah, Jacob Rees-Mogg, I have to say, I think the Joker's worn thin for me. As a backbencher, he had a role, didn't he? He was a characterful figure. He represented, he had conviction.
But ever since he's come into frontline politics, I mean, all the guy ever seems to do is just kind of argue his way out of a sticky situation. You know, I would put it to you, you know.
And I just feel like characters like that, there was a time in politics, right? The banter era, as we call it. The funny bit of politics, where even as you could see that people like Trump and Boris came with a lot of baggage, it was objectively fucking hilarious at times. I'm sorry. I saw a clip the other day of Trump greeting, it was an old clip of Trump greeting Kim Jong-un to the White House. And like they're standing opposite each other, and Trump's going, "Yeah, that's what we want. We want beautiful people. We want slim people with great hair or something." He literally says the opposite of all the things that Kim Jong-un are, and then it swings around to Kim Jong-un, and it's literally like The Office, you know. So of course politics shouldn't be to provide us with entertainment, but fuck me, sometimes it was funny, but it feels like that period that is not now. So I hope that Liz Truss. Obviously, she's not going to be a fantastic communicator. I hope that she's spent the time being the obvious front runner to come up with a fucking plan, because, you know, it's something needs to be said, and it needs to be said quick. And, you know, let's put the pressure back on Labour, and let's have a genuine fucking contest of ideas rather than the Labour Party just waiting for the next time that the government shit the bed. Okay, just a quick hype here. Have I ever said it's not a quick hype? Some of them are really long hypes, let's be honest. Just a reminder, I'm back on Late Night MASH, the first episode of which went out last Thursday, and I spoke a bit about leadership. And if you like a few, I mean, for the dickheads that tried to slam me on Twitter, well, you're not going to like that bit. I think, what's it I said about him on MASH Report? I said he's the human equivalent of a decaffeinated tea bag. And what was the other one? I mean, I'm clearly enjoying my own jokes here. But I also showed a photo of the last four Labour leaders. What was it? Brown, Miliband, Corbyn and Starmer. So imagine them in your head. And I said, they look like men who met on platform 9 3/4 at King's Cross and decided to stay in touch. I was happy. You know, I'm happy with these ones. So if you want to go there, you can go there and catch up. Most catch up telly, UK TV. I know some people listen to this podcast like MASH. Some people, the politics can be a bit left for them. But, you know, if you watch it on catch up, you can go straight to that bit or you can watch the whole programme. There was funny stuff in it. Joel Dommett, excellent. Rachel Paris, I thought, was very assured, given did it for the first time. Debut, that's the word, Jeff. And also, I'm doing this podcast as a spin-off from Late Night MASH, because obviously I think that they thought, God, Jeff was doing the show for a while, but he wasn't even in contention to be the host. Is he offended by that? Let's give him his own podcast with the brilliant Olga Cox. So Olga is a fantastic comic that I saw at the Edinburgh Fringe. She is obviously, like, you know, a lot younger than me and a lot more progressive and stuff. So it's a kind of contest of ideas, and it's called Late Night MASH, the podcast. If you look on any of your podcast providers, please subscribe to it, download it and give it a rating. And let's be honest, even if you're not going to listen to it, you could do that. Hey, the Scroungers. Hey, Scroungers. You could do that. Couldn't you do that for old Uncle Jeff? All right, just get on there, subscribe, download and rate. All right, you don't ever have to ever listen to it. But if you do, I think you'll find it is an illuminating discussion across the generational divide. No, I wasn't reading that off a press release. Just some more new patrons to welcome. Bear in mind that we did the Patreon did the payment, you know, they did the accounts of the payment run thing. So people got kicked out. A lot, you know, there's quite a few people kicked out. So do double check, because always there's stuff coming up. But Claire, we've got Claire join. I think Claire was an old patron who's rejoined. Of course, she's a one-namer. So that means that she works somewhere incredibly right on. I'm going to say advertising, based on every single advert I've seen. I mean, someone needs to tell these advertisers, right, that the people that they put in adverts aren't buying their products. I know that they want to think that fucking fish fingers are really funky and are mainly consumed by lesbian interracial couples. But it's almost now become like a feature of adverts, isn't it? Like, the adverts are no longer... I mean, because the thing is, right, if they wanted to show the people that did consume their product, I guess it would be a bloke like me. So in a way, I can understand why they don't want a tired middle-aged man. They want somebody who's funky, you know, somebody who's diverse. But there is a hilarious disparity between who eats products and who's advertised as eating them. John Kelly, old John Kelly, just sounds like a ladies' man, John Kelly. John Kelly, like, he's one of those guys that you hope is on every stag do. John, is John Kelly coming? Like loads of the blokes have a weird man crush on him, like blowing smoke up his arse. Yeah, John Kelly's got a fucking Audi TT. They actually sort of treat him like a celebrity within the group. John Kelly, mate. Oh, J-Kel. J-Kel's a fucking legend, mate. Do you remember that time he actually banged the stripper? Like met her, got a number, and then was in a relationship with her for 3 months. Yes, she did steal from him, but fucking legend. Catherine Pedrick. That just sounds like you are like a woman, like a leading lady in a Hollywood rom-com. So she starts off, she's a bit uptight, her hair's up. Do you know what I mean? But everyone already knows she's hot. Of course she is. Catherine Pedrick, and then she meets some guy who bit by bit. I mean, it's just such an appealing thing in rom-coms, isn't it? He kind of goes, I don't think you really like that. Of course, in real life, if a man would say that to a woman, just he barely met and go, I think I know the real you. They go, fuck off, please. Call the police. Terry Smith, who's just, that is the most 80s name I've ever read. Terry Smith, I'm just imagining him sitting there in his Ford Capri with the furry dice, watching Bullseye, drinking Hofmeister, following the bear, playing Ted Rogers 3-2-1, Terry Smith. And then we've got David Cowley, who I check your accounts because David, pretty sure he's a returning Patreon. And I think I'll do the same joke as I did before. What's the story, David Cowley? Well, he needs a little time to wake up. And then the next guy is called Ed, which I'm presuming is Edward Hanley. So I'm going to use the same joke again. What's the story, Edward Hanley? Well, he needs a little time to skin up. Wake up. Oh, look, I've heard stuff. So this one you might need a recap on. So Joe Lycett. So there was a launch of Laura Koonsberg's politics show, flagship politics show, on Sunday morning, right? And I think the panel, so they had Liz Truss on, I think they had Rishi Sunak as well. They and then they had a panel, which I think was Emily Thornberry, one of my faves. Oh, I love Emily. Emily, take responsibility, Thornberry. And there was someone else. That's about the level of detail I've got for you. A blonde lady. You can't, Jeff, you can't describe women by their hair. A slim lady. Jeff, you can't describe women. A lady. There was a woman on the other side of Joe Lycett. So Joe Lycett was sitting there and he was asked, so first up, what an incredible booking that is for the first show, right? Now, either the booker is quite savvy and they've gone, we'll get Joe Lycett, it'll do something, it'll get attention for the show. Or, right, or someone hasn't done their research. Of somebody who I think, Joe Lycett's pranks have been so well executed. I enjoy them. And let's get it straight out of the gate here. I thought what he did was funny. It made me laugh when I watched it because what he realised was that if he just went on and sort of did the traditional left-wing jokes or made his criticisms of Liz Truss. Because let's be honest, he wasn't actually saying things that were left-wing. He was criticising the calibre of politicians. So he said a few things and said, you know, some people would say this. I wouldn't say that. And it did make me laugh the way he said, I'm very right-wing. And if you didn't like it, at least give respect for the fact that the balls that it takes to do that, right? And the degree to which he nailed the delivery, like it was genuinely ambiguous the way that he delivered it, to the point where, and we take us back into the crazy world of FBP, rejoin, crazy fucking EU fanatics, is that people are like, dude, Joe, seriously, kind of liked you, but this is a real shock, unfollowed. You fucking morons. You morons. I don't think you should be allowed on Twitter or ever in a comedy club. If you can't see that is ironic, you just think overnight, just, you know, I'm right wing now. Or you should have been hiding it really. Anyway, so he takes the piss and there's this backlash and a backlash to the backlash. People misunderstanding it, you know, in the same way. And I'm not equating these as jokes because Joe's was a bigger joke and it was very well executed. But like, it's like me saying that Liz Truss should say okay boomer. I mean, you have to realize that that is a piss take. What most people think. And that's what I think has been lost in a way, is the great old British art of the piss take. I mean, if you think about, like, you know, Hitler has only got one book, like, with piss takers. It's in the great tradition of taking the piss. And I think, in a way, some of the clamour for, like, edgelords, you know, dark humour or left or right-wing humour, just for sort of forgetting that one of the jobs as a comedian is to take the piss. And, yeah, there are certain times that there are reasons that I push my luck with a subject. It's because you realise how some people are unreasonably tetchy about something. You know, there's some stuff where you go, yeah, if you're delving into the darkest aspects of human behaviour, murder, rape and all this stuff, you go, well, yeah, naturally some people are going to be tetchy. But when it comes to who you think is a good politician, you know, I think that that is all fair game. And so I had a few, you know, and I'm not angry about people reaching out to ask me to go on radio shows and stuff. But I thought, I'm not going to go on and talk about this because I've only got one thing to say, is that I'm always going to defend a comedian's right to take the piss and their creativity. You know, I defended Jerry Sadovich. I mean, that is very, I'm not in any way, before someone goes on and goes, Moorcott has said this is exactly the same as Jerry Sadovich getting his dick out. No, just that, you know, I'm not very left wing, but if there's one union unofficially that I'll always be in, it's the comedians union. I think you've got to stick together. Now, again, whether or not, if I was to do something like that, whether I would get support, I would certainly, some colleagues I would, I don't know, but you've got to just call it as you see it. And I just thought ultimately it was funny. And I have to say, man, the Daily Mail putting that on their front page, I found that fucking astonishing. Said now, comedian. I mean, it's one of those things as well where you get headlines that start with now. I don't know why they say that. There must be some reason. Now, that, well, I suppose it's to give the impression of like everything's getting worse again. Now, comedian mocks PM on the BBC. Oh, now they've got left-wing comics doing the weather. And look at Joe Lycett is a fucking PR genius. If there aren't like advertisers, like the big ones, the Saatchis, the grey advertising, people like that aren't secretly reaching out to him to scratch his brain for ideas on how to get traction, then they're missing a trick. And you know, he's a comic. He's got a tour to sell. He's doing things that are funny that get him attention. I have no issue with that. And I just think, I hope that people who enjoyed that will understand that comedians from both sides will occasionally take the piss and push an idea or a joke to slightly close to its limit to make a point. Okay, we've just got time for one letter here. If you want to email about anything I've said this week, whatmostpeoplethinkuk@gmail.com. And we're going back to this subject we discussed last week about beer fear. Now, a lot of you hadn't heard this phrase before and quite liked it. Beer fear is that feeling when you wake up the following day after having a piss up and you go, well, I must have assaulted somebody because I can't remember anything. So therefore, I've done the worst thing that a human can do, you know, or murdered somebody. Or as I think I said last week, stole change off a tramp. Thanks for the feedback from some of you on that. Look, some of you said I felt that was a bit too far. Fucking, if this isn't the podcast for you, if you think that. So I got a letter in from Ryan. So Ryan says, when you mention beer fear on the podcast, Ryan says that he thinks it's a fairly universal feeling. And it might go a bit into men's mental health. Okay, so I get beer fear really badly after almost every time I get drunk. It's worse when I can't remember what happened the night before and I sit in bed trying to piece together anything I can about the night, like I'm Poirot with Alzheimer's. And my mates and I call it hangxiety. Okay, that's more, you sound younger than me. That sounds like a younger person word, but I think it does the same job. I like it. I'm now at a point where the feeling sticks with me indefinitely and about twice a day. I mean, I get it. It's all I think about. I remember something that I did when drunk and groan on myself. It's become a habit and sometimes I catch myself doing it over things that really weren't embarrassing at all. I mean, like, if you are listening, right, and you've had a recent piss up, the one thing that you forget is everyone else was drunk, all right? There's a big difference to being a bit of a dick when everyone was being a bit of a dick to kind of like, you know, just fucking rushing a kind of Women's Institute coffee morning on a Tuesday, smashed out of your mind. They're probably going to think you're a twat. But if they'd all, you know, if they'd all been putting a fucking little bit of whiskey in their tea, you know, for several hours before, they're going to be like, oh, God, do you remember that fucking loud guy coming? What was he all about? So, yeah, it is worth I mean, it's not saying that, you know, probably we should all not drink to a point where we can't remember it. But also that when we do, just bear in mind that, you know, the strong likelihood is that you, it doesn't matter. When you've got the anxiety or the beer fear, it's all consuming. It's got to a point, this is back with Ryan, where I could be doing anything in my day-to-day life and will suddenly be struck by a crippling beer fear, which could be something that happened years ago. No idea what happens, but it's one of the worst feelings in the world. Of course, I could give up drinking, but beer is nice and getting pissed is mostly fun. That's the attitude. That sounds to me, Ryan, like something beyond beer fear, but something that I also have. And this is a weird thing, given how much I sometimes upset people online or whatever, is that if I just remember a conversation where I could see that I suddenly surprised someone or upset someone, and I'm talking in person, I'm not talking this stupid online world that we wang on about. Yeah, all of those moments stay with me. Do you know what I mean? It's just like a roll call of shame. And you have to think psychologically, right? Let's work this one through together. Men's mental health. Why are you doing this? You know it's okay. You know that that person is still your friend, right? They haven't cut you out. You know, you said something to your mum. She hasn't cut you out of the will. You didn't get taken out of the WhatsApp group, right? So everyone still accepts you. So maybe, and this is Dr. Norcott Sigmund Freud here, maybe, Ryan, we do these things because we are feeling love within ourselves, and it is a form of self-flagellation. Not that form. Also, sometimes that can be a good way of relieving the stress that builds to the feeling. God Christ, this is classy. This is why men are fucked, man. I was making a serious point about mental health. I felt it was getting serious, so I did a silly voice and ended with a wanking gag. Okay, last week, at the end of the show, I often read out reviews, and last week, I made a pathetic appeal for reviews. My God, you've done me proud here. So I'm going to quickly rattle through this. This is from Toots. This is on iTunes, but wherever you leave your reviews, thank you. Bye, Jeff. I don't even like politics, but this is one of my go-to podcasts. Informative, funny, and a great way to end the day. Top-class podcast from Foxy Fife. I've been listening to this for a fantastic podcast for a while, but seeing Jeff perform at the Fringe this year made me finally figure out how to leave a review. That is very kind. Okay, we're just rattling through these. That one seems like a one-star review that's meant to be a five. You pressed the wrong button, you fucking knob. Sean Cafferty, I seem to be on the other side of everything that we actually vote democratically, but I do believe we are a democracy and you make me laugh out loud, and I struggle to find comics who make me do that. Frankie Boyle, Kevin Bridges and Mark Steele get me there, but it seems to be you and four, and that's about it. Well, you mentioned some great comics there. Sparrow Fields, by the time Jeff reads this, we will have a new Prime Minister. I'm looking forward to hearing his take on the opening days of the new government. Well, there you go. You've got my Liz Truss take, is that I'm worried, but I'm hoping there's a plan. And I don't care. This is the thing, if you're left wing, you've got to want the Prime Minister to do a good job. And I know that's hard to say, but if Keir Starmer gets elected, you know, I will want him to do a good job, because if he does a bad job, we're all fucked. This is from Donksu. I've been listening to Jeff since the pandemic, Wallace. I don't agree with everything he says. By the way, that'll be the title of my next show. It's because quite a few people at Edinburgh, every time I stop, people go, you know what, I don't agree with everything you say. I thought, God, that's got to be my catchphrase. Also loves it when he takes the piss out of people's names. Well, your one is just a collection of letters, mate. Will J. Marsh says, a top listen for normal people, not weird shouty lefties. Well, look, I mean, they're not all weird shouty lefties, but this week of all week, given some of the shit I've had online, they're definitely out there. And thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If finances aren't in a position where you can be a patron and support it that way, do please recommend it. You know, recommend the podcast and do little reviews and stuff like that, and you know, keep getting drunk, keep feeling the fear, keep eating fish fingers. I love you all. See you next week.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.